it's time for the truth about airbrushes for Warhammer.
It's not this thing that you buy and your painting quality suddenly goes through the stratosphere.
You've bought a brand new tool that functions absolutely nothing like any of the other brushes that you've been using, assuming that you're just instantly going to be good with it.
This was the thing. This was the thing that's holding you back.
No, you should still be able to do it with a brush.
Once you understand where it is actually going to save you time, instantly you're going to be like, oh, this is it.
Right, I'm making some serious progress with my Blood Angels. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Three torsos are now painted.
That's good going.
Two more on the way. There's two stages of highlights on them.
So how many complete models will you have finished at this point right now?
That will be one, which was the test model. Hang on, almost two. So I done the test model, which was an intercessor to decide which army I wanted to do. So if you count
I
that,
there was a Stern Guard.
No. So I done a Stern Guard after that, which is the first official model, because from the first test model I'd done, there was a few things that I wanted to change.
I love that you're counting the test model. You're not counting that as an, you're saying like, oh,
there's two test models. Right. So I've done the test model intercessor to decide if I wanted to do Dark Angels or Blood Angels.
You're treating it like it's like a pilot to a TV show. It's like, it's not the real first episode. Like, you're like the first official model. You can't just keep, you're going to get,
you're
like,
just salty because the Dark Angels lost that
you're
battle.
You're going to get like 10 episodes. I'm going on to the TV thing. You're going to get like 10 models in and be like, okay, so the first official model is the next one.
I feel sorry for the first intercessor that he painted in the budget. He's like, why am I not good enough for the army?
Yeah.
Right, I painted the first intercessor to decide which army I wanted to do. I decided on Blood Angels, they won, but there was a few things that I wanted to change about the way that I'd painted it, particularly adapting it for army painting. I wanted to do some extra glazing, and I didn't like the black leather, I liked the brown. So if I want that model to be in my squad, I've got to update him, so I'm not counting him. Then I got the box of Stern Guard, and I was like, I'm going to paint one to completion using what I learned from the previous one, and here's my new test model. But he's going to be used. So there is one official model
count.
Done.
He counts. Yeah.
And then I've got three torsos done. And then I've got two torsos kind of sort of done on the way. It's very exciting. I'm thrilled.
Wait, hang on a second. Didn't he say he had like five or six models finished?
No, I think that's because we laugh at the...
That's the Sons of Horus army.
Yeah, okay.
We laugh six models.
Yeah, okay. We laugh at the Sons of Horus thing quite a lot. So I think that's just crept back
so
up.
Even to be fair, even when these are done, if I'm not counting that first test model, this will still be behind my Sons of Horus because I've done a Praetor for them as well.
True. Yeah. So, and you've done a tank for them.
Oh, damn it. Yeah.
You keep getting caught out by the
I feel like I've mentioned that before.
Yeah,
and you
no, seven.
About that.
No, you're right. Seven. Yeah, forget about that tank.
That Everest just got a bit higher.
Yeah. Okay, well, once my Stern Guard are done in 2 or 3 months, and then I've probably going to do like, I've got Captain built and primed. He's ready to go. He's my reward for when I get them done.
Yeah.
And then I've got a box of intercessors waiting, which I'm going to do as one big batch. So
wow.
Exciting times.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm buzzing. This for me is such good progress.
I don't want to big you up too much because you obviously chose Blood Angels over Dark Angels. So if you'd have chosen Dark Angels, I'd be like, oh my God, like, that's so good. Like, oh, they look great.
Still salty.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm settling in quite well to like the salty character on this show that I am. And I'm just going to own it. And I'm just going to be like, every time you do some big success for your Blood Angels, I'll just be like,
for what it counts, it's a good start, George. So, yeah.
He's supposed to be happy for you.
I know.
And that's all you get. Yeah. He ain't got any excuse. I'm trying to be salty. But
I am happy for him. He chose the best chapter. And he's got loads of models on the way.
the overwhelming happiness is good start. Yes, yeah, good.
It's fine.
Good.
Yeah. I'll be happy when he's got a complete squad.
He's judging you for not.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying.
This is the man who just keeps buying tanks and not painting anything. You've got like 36 tanks. You're piling up. I was clever with this army, James. I didn't bite off more than I could chew.
But I've painted quite a few of the tanks. I've actually got them all base coated now. So I've got my colour scheme for my tanks.
All base coated, other than the ones that you haven't even bought yet, because they're like so far down.
No, we're done. That last riser pattern eradicate.
You said that last week. You said it last week.
It's done. We're done.
Well,
tanks.
We should probably address actually when last week was.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So we are pre-recording this episode because I'm away on holiday when this episode airs. But we're only a week or so behind. So
yeah. You taking any Blood Angels with you?
No, I'm James once spoke to me about how if he was going on holiday, he was going to like bring some paint and stuff with him, which to me is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, I've done that.
I'm getting away from the painting. I'm leaving that behind.
A lot of the team do that. Definitely.
I've done that. Because the thing is, it's like, especially with the day-to-day of like, obviously work, like I don't get as much time to paint. So when I go on holiday and I'm not got much, nothing to do, painting's like the best thing. And it's relaxing. And
I love the idea of like traveling to Barcelona or something, get a nice hotel, set up my painting lamp and everything and just sit in the hotel and paint for the whole
time. Paint dries quicker, it's hotter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Why wouldn't you?
That's such a terrible
Why wouldn't you? Because you're on holiday and you've paid to be there.
Well, yeah.
Have you got a favourite character from a book or piece of artwork and thought to yourself, if only that had a miniature? Custom Service is our character creation brand here at Siege Studios. Custom Service is not just a kitbash. We create miniatures using traditional hand sculpting alongside conversion for entirely unique and bespoke miniatures that will blow you away. Our talented team of sculptors methodically and meticulously bring your thoughts into reality with the precise, refined and sharp work you'd expect from a digital sculpt, and pair that with our world-class painting team for an incredible display piece you'll be proud to own. To bring your character to life and get a quote now, head to siegestudios.co.uk or head to the link in this episode's description. Okay, let's get on with some listeners' comments then. North Star Tax Advice says, I love the comment about not following the box art colour scheme. I'm the same way, and as a result, I've never felt bad about my models not looking like the box art. It gives me the freedom to come up with your own colour scheme and try new things without having that voice in your head telling you it's not as good as the box. That's quite cool. I think this was on the episode with Peachy.
It was, yeah. I agree totally. Like, the thing is like his whole thing of like, just don't even think about the box art. It kind of like alleviates any kind of like need to steer towards it.
Difficulty being if the colours is why you like it, I suppose. But
well, yeah, I guess so. But
I think it's separating that though. It's when we're saying, oh, we're copying the box art, we're not necessarily talking about the colours. We're talking about the style and the quality that we're trying to reach. I think that was the big important thing, was that like taking the colours away from it just puts you even further a step away from it, and it's less, you don't have to worry about it. Like you're so far. Because even if you are copying the colours, yeah, you'll look at yours and it's easier to compare then, isn't it, and get down on yourself. But if you're doing your own thing entirely,
well, you're
it's
the one.
Easier to set this other measuring stick, which is just whatever you want it to be. Like, oh, I want to get an army done, or oh, I want to be happy with it and it looks like this or whatever.
Yeah.
That being said, yeah, in principle, this is like brilliant. I love it.
Yeah.
Because you can't compare yourself to the box art kind of in the first place because it's not the same thing.
Right? I think it's like an interesting thing that it's... The reason it's so interesting that it's come up on here is that, like, I think we all need, none of us practice that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So we all needed that conversation. Yeah. We all needed to be like, we all need to be a bit more okay with that, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Which we spoke about on the previous episode where me and you said, well, when we was painting those croup models, that what Peter said kind of resonated with the way we.
Yeah. And we hadn't spoken about that at all.
Yeah.
So
that's fun that we hadn't had a conversation actually since that episode. So it's good that we both picked up on that independently. Put that into practice, and then we came back together and it's like, oh, I did this thing. You're like, oh, well, I did it too.
So it's almost like he's a professional and he's quite good at teaching people how to paint and thinking about stuff, isn't it?
Peachy? Yeah, weird that.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Fake Street Spirit says, since starting painting again, the biggest lesson I have learned to ask is, am I happy? Supportive online communities, podcasts, very much as yours, socials also help me exercise my critical thinking skills with regard to ability, result, or potential. I am making slow progress, perhaps most importantly in terms of self-analysis and worth, and knowing that I don't need to be put off by amazing painters online. Incremental gains.
I think that's it. I think it's like every model you paint, you should then look back at it. It's, as I always say, it's a moment in time captured, which is what I see previous paint jobs that you've done as. That's what they are. So I think reaching that point, like you said, about being happy, as long as you're happy with it and you can look back at the previous things you've done before and go, I can see tangible improvement in X, whether it be applying the paint smoothly or edge highlighting it or whatever it is that you're looking for the ink to increase and be better at, that's ultimately the goal. Like, you want to be proud of it, you want to be happy with it, you want to enjoy what you've done. So
that's why I hate Instagram, because you've got to draw this mental line in the sand of seeking inspiration and not just depressing yourself and comparing yourself to everyone else and ripping yourself apart. I mean, something that I've often said for the last like couple of years especially is like, the only person you should ever compare your painting to is your past self, because what is the point? Like, there's no merit in that. Like, it is so amazing that you've got access to all these amazing painters and you can learn from them, you can get inspired by their work, but you've kind of got to be your own police for not getting too disheartened with it. No one else is really going to stop you, I guess, from doing that. It's only yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam Doughty 813 says, I think it's a pity that we see hobby shaming when we tell someone their choices / skill level / opinions are wrong. It just pushes people out of the hobby. To mirror Liam's point, bikers can be naughty too. Sports bike riders and Harley riders looking down on one another. It's lovely to see wholesome chaps like you guys bringing people into the hobby, as long as they are in the nose piercing cult, of course.
Totally forgot my nose.
That's a throwback.
Yeah, totally forgot mine for this episode. I should have slapped it in for that comment. But,
yeah.
But yeah.
So that was on, obviously, the episode with Liam.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that there were some things that sort of commenter put in their comment about sort of like opinions. Like, I think it nods really nicely to the episode where, unfortunately, we had Paul in place of you. But where we were talking about, feedback. Feedback.
Not a few weeks in a row, Joe, every single time.
Yeah.
Can't live that one down, can you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like when...
I thought it was rubbish, but I thought it was a rubbish episode, personally.
God, he's very salty.
Yeah, no, I didn't think it was rubbish. I didn't think it was rubbish.
I think the
feed... It was long, though, wasn't it? It was like 2 hours. Come on, you lot. Like,
longest episode we've done, I think.
Yeah, without me. Well, because you were enjoying it so much.
Yeah, I, what I was going to say is like, I think it nods really nicely to the thing we were saying about feedback when we spoke about it in the episode with Paul. Like, I think separating it into those two things, a factual and opinionated, helps massively. But like someone tangibly saying to you, like, your opinion is wrong. Like, I mean, at that point, like, other than someone behind the screen and the keyboard saying stuff to you, like, I really would just take that with a pinch of salt and just let them have their sort of like their perspective on stuff.
I feel like.
I can't stand it. I can't.
If anyone is actually saying stuff like that, are we
even entertaining it?
Yeah, it's not like, even worth it, being frank.
It doesn't even become a thing of like, if someone is acting like that online or I don't know, it's just not worth your time, is it?
No,
it's not worth your time getting involved with. Like, it's, you should at least even, we do it all the time, like, you should be able to disagree
on these
things, but...
That's kind of the point of this podcast, is that we all have different ways of approaching painting, and we like to compare the way that we do
one each
thing, and hopefully learn from one another. And then maybe there's a bit of advice we can pick up.
It's exactly, interesting to have a differing of opinion on these things, especially when it's something as sort of unimportant in the grand scheme of things as painting.
Yeah.
Because then it's a fun discussion, and you get to see why different people think different ways about everything. So to just be like, oh, that way is wrong, or this way is like a, you know, my way is better, or whatever. It's just like, who are you? What are you even trying to contribute?
Them get on with it. At the end of the day, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's not gonna hurt you. Like, you know, the words that they are, and like I said, a lot of people with the keyboard think that you know, they can express themselves in that way, and you just have to just let it go over your shoulder.
I suppose you do see it in person as well, to an extent, potentially.
I don't know. I don't think you see it in person as much. I think it takes a lot to
definitely
actually...
Definitely not as much. Yeah. I know people like to hide behind a screen, obviously, but I'm just saying, I wouldn't want to limit it to that and diminish other people's experiences. But like me and you have like, we've all had a laugh on this podcast about the way we like to do stuff, but like there's still, it doesn't mean that the way that person does that stuff is wrong. It's just funny to you because it's different than the way you do it.
Exactly,
But like me and James have very different ways that we tackle a lot of ways we paint. Drilling barrels being a classic one, because James likes to use a JCB excavator to take care of his barrels.
Don't knock it until you tried it,
But that being said, like,
by the way, the barrel drilling thing, I don't want to go back over it, but a concerning amount of backup for James on that point. Like, loads of comments about how good... There was like a really funny... Like,
the memes have been my favourite thing.
Someone did a really funny like video where they had, who was it?
Oh, someone stitched our clip that we put on socials. I'm going to try and get that on screen with the username, but someone stitched like the audio with it. I guess they obviously work. They're like a tradesman.
They had a drill in the hand. Yeah,
great choice.
So that in itself should show that as wrong as something feels, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong, especially when it's something as subjective as how to paint something or build something or whatever.
Yeah, like, I just let them get on with it. Like, you do you. If you're happy with the models and you're happy with what you've done, that's ultimately the most important thing.
And nothing you do will ever be as wrong as George picking Blood Angels over Dark Angels for his army either.
So nothing will ever be as wrong as putting a black base rim on any model ever.
Or not using a DeWalt for your drilling barrels. So
there we go, perfect example for you.
Okay. Next up, I just wanted to give a absolutely massive shout out to all of our regular listeners and a massive thank you from all of us here for listening to this podcast every single week. We've had some amazing reviews come in as well. We actually got ranked number 3 in the UK hobbies category on Apple Podcasts, which is absolutely mental.
That's wild.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, I think number 1 was like BBC gardening podcast or something like that. Like,
should I get some more succulents for the table then?
Yeah, that was really cool to see. But we've had another awesome review that I just wanted to read out as well. This says, this podcast isn't just about mastering brush strokes or perfecting your color schemes. It's about reigniting the flames of passion that may have flickered out over time. As someone who hadn't picked up Warhammer miniature or a paintbrush in over a decade, this podcast has become my unexpected catalyst for rediscovery and reconnection with an old beloved hobby. This week, I received my first box of miniatures in over a decade. In my years in the hobby, I experienced a lingering frustration in the back of my mind that I wasn't able to recreate the box art. In candidly discussing their own experiences, they've offered a new perspective on my own painting challenges. Once the YouTube algorithm made the recommendation, I was hooked, and I quickly set about consuming the back catalogue. The hosts have great chemistry and are genuinely funny and insightful. Don't know about that last bit, but...
I mean, yeah, that's a really good one to hear, actually. The that it, you know, someone's almost getting back into painting because of it, and I mean, that's not something that I thought that
we would achieve with the podcast.
Do for someone, because I kind of was under the assumption that to get any enjoyment out of this podcast, you probably already have to be back in it.
That's been the biggest surprise for me. Like, has been the amount of people that have told me, like, either they're not interested in painting at all, or they're only like vaguely kind of interested in, I guess, the periphery of it, that they still get some enjoyment from this, which is super cool. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you everyone so much. We've done the truth about brushes for Warhammer. It's time for the truth about airbrushes for Warhammer. This is a topic that's been long in the making. I think we've been trying to tiptoe around this one because we wanted to do a full dedicated episode to it. I've curated a few little points on here, but we want to be sort of demystifying the airbrush kind of as a whole, because I think there's a lot of people who don't have an airbrush who see it as this Everest to climb, or they're quite intimidated by it, which is completely understandable. And there might be a lot of people who have an airbrush, they've bought one, they've struggled with it, so, you know, they don't like using it for whatever reason. Or maybe they do like using it, but they're not super comfortable. Maybe it's a case of like use cases or user error potentially, or like products that we recommend or whatnot. So we wanted to demystify it. So
best pun ever. Demystify.
I wasn't thinking of that, but I'm gonna take that.
Smashed it. Absolutely brilliant.
Nice. That was a true Jamesism, unintentionally. Yeah. So I guess it's like starting to rub off now, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, we sit here long enough every week that it's bound to happen, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing is seeing the airbrush as a magic bullet that will just make you a better painter. I think that this is one that I see from a lot of people who potentially don't have an airbrush.
Yeah.
And they see a lot of tutorials that are airbrush focused, or they see a lot of other people with airbrush paint jobs, and they sort of put it up as this barrier of, oh, it's because they had an airbrush, that's why they've painted it better.
I genuinely don't, from all the classes we've taught and from people I spoke to, online tuition or whatever, like there is this anathema of like, it is like this comes out the clouds and appears and your painting gets better. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like,
it's Wayne's World thing. Like, imagine being in like the hobby store and there's like the airbrush and the glass cabinet.
For me, it's like, I think that, like I always say, it is a tool for a purpose, and it has a percentage usage within your miniature painting, but it's not this thing that you buy and you suddenly, like, your painting quality suddenly goes through the stratosphere. Or the funny one that I always see is that people say, oh, you buy it, you know, you enter Golden Demon, you win a gold. Like, that's just like absolute nonsense, being frank. Like, and I think because of that, it has got this kind of like semi kind of stigma of it being this thing that you have to have. I know plenty of painters that use it proficiently. It's not like the cornerstone of their miniature painting. And at the same time, I know plenty of painters that don't hardly use one and use rattle cans for putting color on.
It's massively style dependent, isn't it? Yeah, which I guess we'll get to over the course of this conversation. But just to give a little quick brief background, I have been airbrushing for way longer than I've been miniature painting. So I find this topic quite interesting, because I was doing airbrush painting for a couple of years when I was a teenager, like just t-shirts and canvas sort of painting and that sort of thing. Did do some miniatures, but that was unrelated to Warhammer.
spray tans.
Yeah. One from Essex, Joe.
Yeah, natural.
It's the natural.
Next episode. No.
But no, so I've been using airbrushes for a long time. And then I like no longer had one, moved, got rid of it, that sort of thing. And then I rediscovered Warhammer, I guess, like 5-6 years later. So it was no surprise to me that a lot of people were using airbrushes. That being said, I didn't get one again until I was probably been painting for a couple of years. And I've had this interesting journey with the airbrush where I went from not having one to getting one, using it for everything. It became like a massive corner point of my style and how I like to paint. And it was massively integrated into my workflow. Then now I've pushed it back to this kind of minimal use case. And I'll find myself using rattle cans a lot more now. Mm. And I find myself only really using the airbrush as this tool to put down like a base coat or to do some prep for models, or to do some like effects and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's interesting. Like it has different, that's why I love the airbrush actually, is because it's as complicated or as simple as you want to make it.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It can either be this tool that you use to base coat your models in the winter when it's raining outside, or it can be, you know, this thing that you use to get all of your blends or how you want to paint your vehicles, or it's a part of like a 10-step process in volumetric highlighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think one of the things that that for me is like it's so flexible with how much you can use it or how much you don't use it. And I think exactly the same, me and you, George, are exactly the same with it. Like the percentage that I use it now, I to use a very layman's terms way of explaining it, just so I can deliver it as quick as possible. Like for me, it's literally like a roller when I'm doing DIY. Like I'm not gonna paint a wall with like a 000. You know, I'm gonna use an airbrush to sketch the main color on the model, or to do the main armor color, or the main majority color on a miniature.
But just to unpack that again, it's a time saving tool.
Exactly.
It's not I couldn't do this with a brush. You're using it in a sense of efficiency.
It is all about efficiency. Like, I always say that as well. You shouldn't rely on the airbrush to apply a smooth coat of paint onto a miniature. Like, you should be able to use it with a brush through good dilution and good application, and obviously maybe a hairdryer, whatever, blah, blah. Like, use a paintbrush to get paint on smooth. It doesn't necessarily have to always be an airbrush. Because the thing is, like, What if you paint the main color of the model with an airbrush and then you slip with a bit of paint or whatever? You're going to get the airbrush out to re-block in that mistake. Like, no, you should still be able to do it with a brush. And I think that it has, unfortunately, because of just the way that it's portrayed, it has got this kind of like Excalibur raising from the lake kind of like viewpoint on it for a lot of people. It's not this thing that like transforms your painting instantaneous, and it's not this thing that's like you're never going to use a brush again or anything crazy like that. It is a cornerstone of miniature painting if you want to paint high quality and efficiently, but it doesn't take away. I always say it's like a 10-15% of 100%. That's the way that I kind of explain it. Like, I don't really use it for more than 10-15% of the process.
I on the note of it not making you like instantly a better painter, I do want to touch on something else potentially within that, which is that one of the things to watch out for, I think, is that, and one of the reasons I think this sort of rhetoric is spread and why people think that is the case, is when you do first get an airbrush for the first time and you use it for the first time or first couple of times and you're getting used to it, and you maybe are more of a beginner painter in general anyway, it will feel like it's completely transformed your painting. Like when you, for the first time, if you're used to just like base coating stuff with a brush, and then you do like a zenithal highlight with your airbrush for the first time, at that point, it will seem to you like you have just broken through some insane skill gap and you are now ready to paint like, or you're now going to win a Golden Demon. This was the thing that's holding you back. It will feel like that because it happened to me. Like, I remember the first time I used, we spoke recently about the first time I actually got my head around glazing. I used that for the first time, and then that unlocks this whole thing. The first time, if you're used to painting Space Marines, the first time you then come at it with an airbrush and do yourself a zenithal highlight, and relatively quickly all of those volumetric highlights are there straight away and it looks smooth and it's nice, it will feel like you've made probably a lot more progression than you have in that moment.
I kind of understand that. I do, and actually in reflection in the way you describe it, I kind of makes me I can actually do understand why that would be
why people would think
I am saying I agree with you that it doesn't actually do that, but at the start, it is going to feel like it.
And I guess as well, you see a lot of high-end painters and competition painters using them. And I guess that kind of trickles down to the assumption that if they are using it, that must be part of it.
Yeah, I think because it's just visually going to be such a big difference in terms of, oh, okay, I've base coated this model with a brush to I've gotten three stages on with an airbrush and done all the volumes and stuff. Instantly, you're going to be like, oh, this is it. Like, this has solved everything for me. Do you know what I mean? It hasn't, but I think that is potentially why.
But I think that's that one of the interesting things about how sort of like flexible the airbrush is, and also how good for new painters it is in picking it up for the first time, because it gives the result that you're explaining.
It's a confidence boost
because it's giving you that person to think, oh, right, look, I can get the paint on really smooth. I can get all things. But the thing is like, nothing against anyone who's picked it up for the first time and that's been the case, but like, that's not really on the person or the skill of the painter. That's just the direct result of how the airbrush functions, if that makes sense.
That's
the best way for me to explain it. Like, I think
that's why, but that's why what I'm saying happens is because they just think, because it is on the airbrush and it's not on them, they haven't had to change anything. So then they just get this extra stuff and they're like, oh, wow, like this is it. And that's how I felt at the start. I was like, I've cracked it. Like, I've done, this looks incredible. Mm-hmm. And then the more you actually start to use the airbrush and the more you progress with your painting in general, you start to realize, oh, okay, I haven't actually made any huge ground there.
As a bit of a devil's advocate to that, I will say that I have seen a lot of people who've had kind of the opposite experience, where they've bought an airbrush and maybe it wasn't a very good quality one, or they had some issues with it, or they wasn't entirely sure on how to use it, and they've had headaches from day one, like, you know, instantly clogging, maybe the paint's not flying out exactly how it should, maybe they've ruined some models, and they've not had that like eureka moment of like, oh, this is mental.
They've
had this like, what?
I've heard plenty of painters that come on classes that bring the airbrush and they've bought one, I've had it for a year sitting in the cupboard because they picked it up for the first time, tried using it, ruined a model, or it blocked.
I think what I'll caveat then is like, however long it takes you to get past the point of having issues, you have to use it a few times and then be comfortable with it, I guess.
Well, that segues perfectly actually, because one of the next point that I've got on here, sorry to cut you off, is it's a tool that you've got to learn like anything else.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I think there is this assumption that like, pay to win, buy a good airbrush, buy a good compressor, it's going to look good. And people skip this part where you've bought a brand new tool that functions absolutely nothing like any of the other brushes that you've been using. It's a completely new thing.
Yeah.
And then just assuming that you're just instantly going to be good with it. It's like, oh, okay, I've learned how to drive, I'm going to be a great pilot now.
Again,
Those skills don't translate.
I do think this again comes down to the same point, and I hope I'm explaining it properly, but it's, if you are a newer painter and then it does go well with your airbrush at the start, you might not, you think you've instantly made more progress than you have. So you potentially end up thinking that you don't need to spend as much time learning it specifically.
Sure.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you definitely do need to, and you need to treat it as its own separate thing.
But
as artists, we know how time-consuming painting miniatures is, especially if you want to achieve a high standard for tabletop or display. Life is busy, and we don't all have 8 hours a day to paint. Plus, if you're still early in your painting journey, it may feel that you're a long way off ever owning your own beautiful army for your games. For 10 years, Siege Studios has been delivering bespoke miniature painting commissions to collectors and gamers all over the world. We have a world-class team of artists from Golden Demon winners to ex-studio painters, collating hundreds of years of collective experience. Here at Siege, we offer a series of painting levels and services to meet your needs and budget, whether you want a favorite character for your display or a stunning gaming army. We pride ourselves on offering well above the industry standard of quality and our customer experience. To see our gallery, learn more about our services, and get a quote now, head over to siegestudios.co.uk or head to the link in this episode's description.
One of the biggest mistakes I think that painters do make when they first get an airbrush is literally the excitement of getting one, which is, look, it's this new thing. It's almost like that when a new range or new faction or new miniature comes out, you're super excited. You want to build it, look at the instructions, work kind of stuff. And obviously with a tool like with an airbrush, you want to get that model and you want to use the airbrush really quickly on it and get an effect on it or whatever. And I think that's one of the first stumbling blocks that I see a lot of new people using airbrushes that make. They have that excitement, which we all have, don't get me wrong. But I think, like with anything, practicing on something that is less of a risk is one of the biggest things that I'd always advocate. So like one of the first things, like, you know, I would say is if you've not got one, or if you're buying one, or if you just got one, don't even go near a model. And what I mean by that is literally just put some water into the airbrush, put some ink or like a high saturation paint in there as well, so that you can make some really thin diluted water that's tinted a color. Get some paper and just practice trigger control, dots, lines, doing some smooth passes on the airbrush, getting a consistent colorization of a pass and things like that. That is actually fundamentally a better investment of your time and a better way to do it without that false expectations appearing real of making a mistake or holding it too close, making a big splodge on the model, all those kind of things that I know loads of painters and from people who've spoke to me on classes, from people that I spoke to just in general about airbrushing. You know, it's one of the things that I think a lot of people do make the mistake of is like, don't get me wrong, we all have that, oh yeah, I've got an airbrush, I've got a new thing to try or whatever, blah, blah. And then they make that mistake, which ultimately makes them think very negatively of this new thing that they've got. And that's, I think, one of the real things that you should just take your foot off the gas a little bit with the excitement and go, cool, yeah, I've got this new thing, but I need to master it and understand that there is a lot of control that you need to master with the trigger on the airbrush, as well as distance from target and stuff like that, that will then give you that confidence to pick up the model for the first time and apply several different like colors on a VCM, or whether you do Zenith, or whether you did just try and paint the cape red on the model, whatever it is, without that nasty kind of like spurt of paint on the model or spider effect on the model, whatever it is like that. Practice on some paper first. You know, I'd even say, like I said, water on some cardboard, like some brown cardboard, because you'll see the mark quite nicely on the cardboard.
Nice thing about water as well is it's basically guaranteed to not clog.
Exactly.
There's nothing in it. It's just going to flow through perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. Like the moment you start putting high pigmentation, high medium, like don't even get me started on like metallics or like things like that through the airbrush, like
just anything that can dry,
you're gonna unfortunately, that's where the issue is. Like you as I said, you wouldn't just jump in a car and, you know, and start driving it at 200 miles an hour if you've never driven before, you know, like. And it's exactly the same with an airbrush. You should put in that work to start off with, so that ultimately you have confidence of use when it comes to that 60, 70, 100 pound model, whatever it is that you're going to airbrush with it, if that makes sense. That's the thing that I've seen a lot of. I think that really I wanted to just get out straight away is just practice on something and get that control. It all stems from your trigger control on the airbrush, trigger control, distance from target, PSI to an extent, but that's a whole nother conversation that we can have in this episode.
Yeah, we don't want to get too much into the nuances of using an airbrush specifically. I guess it's just talking about the sort of things around it, the stigmas and such. I think the best comparison for it is it's like learning to use a paintbrush. Like, you don't just pick up a paintbrush and you're instantly like doing 9 stages of edge highlights within each other. It's just not reality. There's like we're learning to base coat large surfaces. Okay, now we're learning to do some glazing. We're learning to do some highlighting. It's like those incremental jumps. I think because you kind of, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you kind of see it as like the airbrush is doing the job rather than you, but your input has such a big impact on how it's going to turn out. So you kind of feel like, I bought a good airbrush with a really tiny needle. The airbrush is capable of doing these tiny, really precise micro blends. You forget the bit that, you've still got to hold it and point it at it and know how to dilute your paint properly and et cetera, et cetera. The biggest thing that I think people get wrong about this is that it's going to make you faster, because you see these airbrushes used, I think, a lot in speed paint videos. And I think as well, like you were saying, if you're a new painter, try picking one up, it covers like so quick. But there's a lot of faff with the airbrush that you can't really get around. And I think that's the best word for it. There's a lot of like, even if you've got like a permanent setup, like I used to be fortunate enough to have like a spray booth at my desk with the airbrush set up. Never, didn't have to lift a finger to set up. I was literally already sat in my chair, turned to the left, there's my airbrush, it's ready to go. But there's the cleaning of the airbrush. There's the getting your paints and thinning it out. And also, especially when you compare it to like a spray can, for example, with priming, when I first got my airbrush, just wanted to use it for everything. It was my base coating tool, it was my priming tool, it was my varnishing tool. It's minimal brushwork because I could get involved, like the better, that was the way I saw it. But I did soon realize that, especially when it comes to like approaching an army, because of the airbrush, just in the way you approach painting a model in general, it's kind of on an individual basis. It's rare that you can really batch spray to an extent, but not really in the same way, because you've got this really fine mist that's coming out of the airbrush. So you kind of have to approach models like one at a time. So if you've gone from having like a big bit of wood or like a spray stick or like a box that you spray paint all of your models in when you're doing a priming. If you've gone from doing like 10, 15 models at a time to like doing one, and it doesn't just cover in one blast, you've got to like build up the color slowly, because especially if you're doing like, say, you know, yellow and you've primed them all black, then you're going to have to like build up that. You're going to have to do multiple passes, because it's not going to be, even though it's going to be full coverage, it's not going to be full opacity, which are two different things. So having to do like three or four stages and letting it dry in between, and then you're doing that on an individual model rather than doing it as a group, I did find really quickly that it was slowing me down. And that's why now I'm using the airbrush for as little amount of my painting as possible, using it for its advantages of getting like nice smooth base coats. I can use any color and I'm going to get a perfect match for it, because I like to make my own airbrush paints based off my normal acrylics that I use on my wet palette, rather than having to find like a spray can that doesn't perfectly match. But it slowed me down a lot, and I've started to try and shift away and using it for its main strengths. But like, it can be used to do things quicker and more effectively, but when you factor in the overall time spent from start to finish, especially if you don't have a dedicated setup for it, I think you'll often find that just getting a spray can and blocking in some base colors with a brush, it's a pretty tried and true method.
I think one of the things that's made it easier now to not have to have an airbrush in that sense is the fact, like companies like Colourforge, for example, you know, and even GW with the 12 cans that they have, they do rotate the cans and do different things, etc. Like, there is a much wider selection of spray can now compared to how they used to be. So
even like 8 years ago, yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, even like not even that long ago.
Well, Colourforge have only been around a couple of years. You know, it's not been like, I don't quote me on it. Obviously, I have to check.
It feels
this,
but maybe just
two or three years before COVID, or maybe
during the first year of COVID.
I know when it was. It was when there was a shortage of Chaos Black.
It was around the same time, it was probably during COVID. So it's not even like that. They haven't even been around that long. So if you take them out of the equation, there really wasn't that many. I mean, as we say, Army Painter had quite a few. But yeah, it's not, there hasn't always been as many available.
But I know what you're saying totally about the faff side of it. And I think one of the things that for me is that what I found helpful is just getting loads of processes for those little things that are the faff, and just streamlining that thing. Like, for example, real simple one, like at the end of a session, don't leave your airbrush all in one piece. Take it apart. I've got like a Tupperware box that literally I'll take it apart at the end of a session, give it a quick wipe, put it all in individual components, yeah, if that makes sense. Like the needle cap, I'll give it a quick clean through just so there's nothing actually gunked up in it. But other than that, by taking it physically apart, those components will not stick together. You can put the lid on so no dust and stuff goes on the components, all those kind of things. It's little, I don't know what we're going to come up with as an acronym, but it's like those little airbrush procedural stages, APSs,
LAPS, everyone's gonna have their own way of doing this. Everyone's gonna have their own way of doing this, but I like to just completely flush mine out of loads and loads of water, bit of cleaner, pull out the needle, wipe it. Mine goes back in the box. That's my approach to doing that.
Again, that's a complete different thing. Like, we both have use of the airbrush, we don't both mitigate problems as much as possible, but individually George and I both have different ways of doing it. Like, the thing is like those little things that you put in place to mitigate any potential problems that you're going to have with using one, it does to an extent mitigate the faff.
But there's no way to like inherently get rid of it. It's kind of an inherent problem with the tool. I've found the only way to get around the like clogging issues or just general like teething headaches the airbrushes give you is to really baby them and just try and keep them as, because you're shoving paint through it, like, and the paint dries out. There's no way to get around that.
Exactly.
The only way to really make sure that whenever you pick up that airbrush and it's going to function properly exactly as you want is to really, really religiously clean it.
Yeah.
But there's no, like, you can streamline that process as much as you want, but we all know that when you're done with a paintbrush, you rinse it out and you wipe it on your kitchen paper. It takes seconds. Yeah. And that's just something that you're not going to get around.
No, I mean, ultimately, you are putting paint through a tiny little hole, and the paint, if you leave any in there, it's going to block, you know? And I've got to say this, like, there's this thing. I can sit here with nearly 8 years of use of the airbrush and say to you that anyone who says they never get a blockage is talking nonsense. I'm sorry. Like there has been plenty of times where even the most proficient of painters would have been disturbed by something, or the door's gone, or they've been their dog's run in with a cat in its mouth. Not
just
something
that,
crazy.
Though. Like, you don't thin the paint properly or using a new paint you're not familiar with. I'd say that I get depending on degree, but I get at least a little micro clogs every single time I'm using it, more or less.
And the other thing is that when you add on the layer of nuance of I've got a new paint and I'm going to try it for the airbrush for the first time, like you said, you're not going to dilute that paint perfectly that time, or you're learning that paint and how it dilutes for use in the airbrush, etc. There's going to be things in that process where you're going to potentially make a mistake or put not enough thinner in or whatever. It happens to all of us. And it's almost like the thing that Peachy was saying on the other episode about making mistakes and stuff like that. It's like, there's nothing wrong with saying, yeah, I get blockages, but I know how to deal with it. And I know how to do everything I can to prevent it and mitigate it as much as possible, you know? So
at the end of the day, you're taking paint, which dries from air.
Yeah.
And you're shoving loads of air through it.
Yeah.
You've got obviously the distance between, if you're using a gravity fed airbrush, which is, I'd say probably 99% of people are for miniatures. If you're using a gravity fed airbrush, there is still a distance between the tip of the needle and
the cup. Yeah.
So it's still got to travel that distance. And during that distance, it's having loads of air fired at it and it's being projected with compressed air. And then you're spraying a load of air onto it as it's drying on the surface of the model. So at some point during that...
Before we mentioned going through a tiny little hole.
Yeah, exactly. You know, before we're going through a 0.02 millimeter hole, whatever it is. So it's going to happen. And also, even if you do everything right, you can't account for there being a tiny little crumb of dried paint that ended up say it was on the lid of the bottle that you was putting in there, or there's a little bit of dust or debris, or say you mix your airbrush paint in the cup. Might have had a tiny bit of debris on the brush that you didn't know was in there. It's eventually going to find its way through that hole.
Of course it is.
And if it doesn't fit through it, it's going to block it up.
I think that's the thing. It's when a blockage happens, a lot of people do panic about it. And it's there's a couple of things that you really just need to just put as part of your, it's almost this has happened, so I'm going to follow all these steps and it'll get me back to the point of use. Sometimes people put way too much paint in the cup. One thing I'd say is that if you do get a blockage and you've got all this paint in the cup, you're like, what do I do with this excess paint that I've got, etc. I personally would always thin and dilute paint in a shot glass, or if you're doing a big army project, if you've watched the back catalogue here, I like a ketchup bottle,
just buy a drop of bottles, a normal person.
Okay, anyway.
I used my fancy drop first time fairly recently with a new mix that I was doing.
Yeah. How's that?
Love it.
Good,
solid dropper bottles, those.
Yeah.
So very well done on the recommendation. Thankful that listener who found the link as well.
Yeah. No, that's sick. That's the, I'll try and put it in the link of the description of this episode. There's some dropper bottles that we recommended on a past episode, if you didn't catch that one.
They were the official Vallejo empty bottles, but then we couldn't find them anywhere.
So. They've been out of stock for seemingly 2 years. Some places still have them, but, yeah, okay, right.
Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all good. That's all
go
good.
On, Jason.
Important matters.
No, but it's literally a case of just if you do get those issues, just knowing how to deal with it and training yourself in certain situations and circumstances, what is the course to follow to get back to the point of use? As I said, if you have too much paint in the hopper or the cup or whatever you want to call it, and you get a blockage, a lot of people will spill the paint on, or it'll blast back and go everywhere, etc., by not putting so much in. And if you get a blockage, you're not wasting as much, by using a big drop bottle, ketchup bottle, shot glass, whatever you dilute your paint in, putting in a little bit for use, using it, putting a little bit. It's, you're actually being more efficient with time. Keep adding a little bit into the airbrush to keep using it, so that if you do get a blockage, you're not going to hemorrhage 20 minutes trying to deal with paint everywhere because it's exploded all over your hand. there's loads of little stages and things that you can easily put in place that don't stop there being things about using one that you do need to stay on top of, but it just helps streamline the process and give you the confidence of use, which ultimately is what we all want. We want to have confidence in the tool which we're using. So that's one of the things I definitely recommend, is just don't think that it's this thing that's never going to have a problem. You are going to have them, but knowing how to deal with them will save a lot of time, make you more efficient, and give you the confidence.
If you're a long-term listener of the podcast, you'll know how important it is to have the right tools to aid you in your painting. And if there's one piece of equipment that I could never live without, it's my Onyx lamp from Native Lighting. It doesn't matter what brush or paints you have if you can't see what you're doing in the first place. The Onyx is the perfect lamp for miniature painting because it's super bright, 2200 lumen LEDs cast soft and diffused light on your models without any harsh shadows. and its daylight balanced color temperature of 6500K gives you the confidence that the colors you are painting are accurate. As someone with a very small hobby desk, by far my favorite feature though is its articulating arm, which clamps to the side of your desk, maximizing your workspace. It's also super adjustable, so you can sit comfortably in the perfect painting position without sacrifice. It also folds up into a compact shape, which is great if you like to travel to paint with your friends. To upgrade your setup and order yours now, head to siegestudios.co.uk/shop or head to the link in this episode's description. Well, now we've covered those sort of cons and caveats and potential issues around it and myths around it, should we talk about the pros? So, Joe, I'll let you take away with this one. You're saying you had this sort of magical eureka moment of getting one. Should we let's big it up. We've put the airbrush in its place where it belongs, but it's obviously got its amazing perks. Otherwise, we wouldn't all be using them.
Yeah, it is. I think part of the confusion is going to be how you initially described it as a time-saving tool, but then also we had a whole point just now where it's like a load of faff that's not necessarily going to save you time. So I think once you understand where it is actually going to save you time and you can utilize that, then you'll start to benefit a lot from it. And I think if I'm specifically talking, in terms of time saving, if I'm specifically talking about, for example, you want a gradient on something, on a flat panel, or even on just like a full model or something like that, it is going to save you time versus glazing by hand.
100%.
Every shadow, every 100%. Highlight, and so on.
And a lot of time, especially if you're like, say you're doing a big tank army like James, for example, and you've got a lot of them and you've got a lot of big flat surfaces, or if you're painting like a vehicle or like a, you know, knight or something like that, then there's even once you factor in all of the faff, you're still like net overall saving a ton of time.
Yeah. And ultimately the quality of the way the paint lays on the model is as smooth as anything, which is what you want. You know, I just want to
I tried to finish this,
all I would say is that is that airbrushes within Warhammer, this is the other thing that I just want to say really quickly, airbrushes within Warhammer, there are certain painters that have used them for a very long time within Warhammer, but really airbrushes have been mainly used within historical modeling and scale modeling. And the reason for that, like if you think of Airfix kits, you think of tanks, you think of World War II things, the reason for that is because you want the models to look as realistic as possible. Those vehicles are painted with a much bigger industrial size airbrush for painting those kind of things. That's why it's transitioned into 40K, because it's a better tool to give you a smoother finish and a more realistic finish. And that's really it.
Okay, well, on that then, what are you sort of using it for currently? Is it mainly for the blending and that sort of thing?
I'm kind of in this weird thing of like experimenting with it, I guess. I go through phases with it where like I don't actually necessarily like the heavily gradient look on models.
It's its own style, isn't it? I think that's something that's overlooked.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm in this weird position where I would say that is the instant benefit from a airbrush, of you not having to have a lot of knowledge on how to use it, but you can get that look. Where I'm not particularly a huge fan of that look, kind of picking moments where to try and use that, or just doing that like a little bit more subtly. Mm-hmm. Just to add like a tiny bit of interest into what would otherwise be a flat color. But yeah, for me, it's mostly just base coating the most prominent color, which I've touched on before, and where I was painting some Tau, for example, where I just autopilot airbrushed the armor color. And then when it actually came to painting the models, I kind of realized, oh, it's actually not, this isn't most of the color. And now I've got to tidy everything else up. I probably would have been better off just using a brush on these models. So I think I'm still kind of getting this thing right of knowing when is actually going to be a time save and when is actually going to help me get a smoother coat maybe, but it's going to add time.
I think as well,
tidy up and stuff.
It depends on the size of the models as well. Because if you're, like we said earlier about doing tanks, or I'm thinking like, you know, knight armies, or, you know, If just in general, you know, even if you're doing historicals or some other game systems other than Warhammer, whatever size alternative, like if you're just doing everything by hand, even if you are really, really good at putting down smooth base coats, if you've got a big tank like a Repulsor, or if you're doing like a Chaos Knight, or you're doing like a Titan or something ridiculous, or, you know, some of the Cadian vehicles, there is a limitation on how smooth you can get a massive flat panel. I would argue that the airbrush is probably going to give you a smoother base coat, at the very least for minimal effort, and even at the very, very least, in a much, much more time efficient manner, especially depending on the color that you're using. Obviously, there is the alternative argument that you could use a spray can, but what if there's not a spray can that's the color you want to use? Or you can't find that one, or there's the cost saving argument of like, yeah, the airbrush might cost me, you know, a couple hundred quid up front, but rattle cans aren't super cheap. And if you've got like a big army, or you want to make that investment in your setup that's going to last you and give you a lot of flexibility. So I, for example, don't buy any airbrush paints. I never have. I don't buy any like special stuff for the airbrush. There is a knowledge and skill set, I guess, there in knowing how to dilute your regular paints. But the upside is whatever paint I use to base coat a model is going to be the same paint that I can then go in and do touch-ups with. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a perfect match. I'm not going to have any issues with that. Whereas if you're buying even, I mean, we've seen it before. I mean, we've picking up the Colourforge matches, but not every single can has got a perfect match. Mm-hmm. Even if they advertise it as a perfect match, it might not necessarily be one. And especially if you're doing a massive model, say you've got a big tank and you've sprayed it with a can that's supposed to match, you know, whatever blue it is you're using. Sometimes when you do go and touch it up, you do notice it.
Yeah.
You do notice it.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I've had that before. I've had a can that didn't match the paint. And yeah, like, again, just using straight color diluted through the airbrush, and then just it gives you the confidence to be able to touch up anywhere you need to without any problems. And I think that's one of the things that I've always kind of like, that you're talking about the decision of like when to actually do it. And you are right, like majority color, picking the majority color, but that doesn't always necessarily mean like the main color of it. It could be, well, there's more pouches on there than there is fabric, like you said. So you think maybe you spray it green because the model's green or got green armor, camouflage, whatever, blah, blah. But actually there's more leather on there that I've got to paint with a brush. Is it better for me to actually just put the brown on everything and then just paint the green?
Did you speak about that towel model that you had? You'd done a Pathfinder and you said you wish you'd sprayed it.
That's kind of the example I was giving. And it's also the, what sometimes it could be like maybe not volume in terms of like how much you're going to have to paint this color, but look at the areas that are going to be harder to paint as well. Especially if you haven't done a sub-assembly, as I tend to not do. If there's areas that are like inside hard to reach with a brush, maybe that's the color you want to do the airbrush with, because it's going to cover those quite easy, and then you paint the areas that are around it or something like that. So it's just learning the different, once you've learned the different situations and how to pick the right colors in those different situations, that's, you're going to get a huge benefit from the airbrush, I think.
So just to throw into the, because you're saying about positives and to talk about positives about it, like for me, like if I had to pick a couple of things, it's obviously just the efficiency, the speed, the quality, they're the key things for me. And I understand there's things that take time for you to get used to, whatever. But if someone put a gun to my head and said, paint a tank, I know what my option, my choice would be straight away. I'm not going to be picking a big brush to paint it by hand. I can tell you that for a fact, you know, like it's going to be using an airbrush. And I think once you get those bits, there are loads of positives that come from doing it. You can do some amazing things with an airbrush. Like there's some really good, and the more control you develop with it, like you can do tiny, tiny little effects, tiny little like.
And if you do like that style that Joe was pointing out earlier, you're kind of left with no other choice really, to an extent. If you do like that very, very volumetrically highlighted style, you can do a similar look with a brush, but it's quite hard to get that exact look.
Well, even with a spray can, like, you know, I've seen people do like VCM or do Zenithal with cans, and it doesn't look anywhere as refined as using an airbrush. And that's
because those like little flecks of paint, the atomized paint, they're not as fine with a spray can.
Well, it's like just not that. It's also like the cone, the projection cone from an atomized can.
Yeah, it's not as fine, and you've got no option as well, because if you haven't used an airbrush before with a dual action airbrush, which most of the ones that we use for miniature painting are, you can control not only the volume of paint that's being fired out of it, but also the like width of that spray.
Yeah.
So you can paint a very, very small, fine line, or you can paint a very, very wide, fat, you know, blast out that you'd be expecting from a rattle can. But where that comes into play is if you're painting something like a tank and you want to get a blend on this one specific area, you can spray an appropriately sized width patch of paint onto that area rather than just having to attack the whole thing and try and get the right angle where you're just sort of catching the edges of it.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I think is absolutely amazing for it is, no matter the weather outside, you can be painting. If you are starting an army and you've got them all built, and then you look out the window and it's absolutely hammering down with torrential rain or snow, or it's freezing cold. You know, we've spoken before about like warming up spray cans to make them a bit more effective in the cold weather. But, you know, if it's raining, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's going to, I think, weird little fact, but I think like one of our most downloaded, like, the cities from one of our most like most people have downloaded the podcast is like Melbourne or something. So it's like, I don't know if a lot of our listeners are going to be able to relate, because a lot of Americans listen, a lot of Australians listen. They probably have nice weather a lot of the time.
Super jealous of that.
But when you're here, when you're in Britain, that is genuinely a big thing. I remember, like, I used to, before I had an airbrush, I used to plan my
checking the BBC for the
like the year almost, and think like roughly in my head,
trying to
like,
plan when you're buying your army,
like just like roughly in my head, be like, right, well, yeah, I'll make sure I'll have to get all those models in and get them like primed in June or whatever.
It's often more like, deflating than like, yeah, new year, new army. And then you just turn your head and you look out the window.
Well, it's like a thing. It's like you look to the summer months. It's like, you know, you look to summer months for running out in your garden. And getting. I used to batch undercoat and batch prime loads of models in the summer so that I didn't have to worry about that.
Even
the
that's
winter.
Not a fail safe though, because we have such ridiculous weather here. Even in the summer, it's too hot.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
It's too hot to spray.
Yeah. Or it is still just raining.
Yeah, or it's still raining. In the summer, congratulations, you're done with the winter weather. What do you get? Oh, I get 35 degrees and it's absolutely melting. And I couldn't paint anyway because my paint would be drying up the second I put it on the palette.
Yeah.
Or it's still raining.
It's warm rain though. Yeah. It's still warm rain.
Oh, warm rain. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
The thought of using an airbrush to paint your miniatures can seem daunting. We see them used all the time in videos and tutorials on YouTube. But how do you start? There's an overwhelming amount of choices to make, like what compressor should you buy and which airbrush is right for your needs. These are questions we hear all the time from new painters, which is why we decided to partner with Everything Airbrush to create the ultimate bundle kits to get you started. These bundles were hand-picked, built upon equipment we and our artists here at Siege have been using for years, so we can stand by its quality, durability, and dependency. Whether you want an affordable entry point or a professional-grade setup, we have you covered with airbrushes and compressors that are perfectly paired to complement one another. The kits also include all the hoses, fittings, and accessories you need so you can get going straight out of the box. And best of all of the items included in the kit are from brands you can trust, like Harder & Steenbeck and Sparmax. Even if you're already an airbrush user, Everything Airbrush is still the best place to shop for all of your maintenance products, replacement parts, paints, and equipment. They have a huge inventory no matter what you need. With speedy delivery and excellent service, it's no wonder why they boast a 5-star rating on Trustpilot. To order your kit now, head to our affiliate link in this episode's description or go to everythingairbrush.com. Okay, last thing I have on here as a little point is more expensive doesn't always mean better. And I think you can get tripped up here if you're buying your first airbrush or maybe your second airbrush. Logic would dictate that the fancier airbrush you buy with all the bells and whistles is going to be just full stop better. Why wouldn't you buy the better one? But a lot of the cost associated with airbrushes is the tooling costs and how fine and precise these, you know, really over-engineered like tools are. But generally speaking, especially for miniature painting, even within like a paint range, like it really depends on what you're using it for. So one of the things that often attributes to a higher cost is a smaller needle and a smaller needle nozzle set, which will mean that you can paint much more tiny and precise. But if you're someone who's going to be using your airbrush as a time-saving tool for painting tanks, that airbrush is going to be worse for you than a cheaper one with a bigger nozzle because it will cover more area.
I completely agree. With some caveats in that, like the instinctive go-to for a lot of people that want to get into it is they'll jump on eBay and they'll buy a really cheap setup or kit off of there that's maybe a Chinese one or blah, blah, whatever. And the problem with that is that it hasn't got that engineering and all the things that
it's are, the other extreme.
It's the
spectrum.
Other extreme. So all of the things that create bad experiences, like it blocking or, it, you know, you take it apart and it's like the craziest jigsaw ever to put back together, you know, or like, you know.
Well, they use, like a lot of them require tools to disassemble. Yeah, like, and you want to be disassembling like, every time you're using it.
I don't
want a tiny little spanner.
So I'll say what I always say on classes and to anyone we teach, like we're not affiliated with any manufacturer of airbrushes at all whatsoever. And like the team here at Siege use a whole plethora of different airbrushes to execute projects. But the manufacturer that is consistent with a lot of team is Harder & Steenbeck. The one thing with the airbrushes that I can say is that
they are very well engineered. If you're big into cars, the same analogy of obviously car engineering is very similar with obviously the airbrushes. They are really well manufactured and engineered.
Made in Germany.
So again,
they missed off the bit that it was actually.
You went with cars, and I was thinking it was going to say made in Germany.
There might be some people here that like other manufacturers.
Japanese
cars.
Engineering.
Yeah, Japanese, yeah. Exactly. So
I got on this.
So, you know,
I'm a master. So yeah.
So what I would say is that, like, I always say, like, as an entry point, like, even a low end, like a low budget kind of like one of the airbrushes, either an Evolution or, you know, or the Ultra, for example, they are.
Or the Infinity.
Well, the Infinity is right at the top end of the spectrum. So, and again, there's personal choices whether you like the Infinity for the extra sort of buttons and whistles and things.
Well, sorry to cut you off too much, but that was kind of what I was getting at was, say you take Harder and Steinbeck as an example. They've got their three main offerings within that. They've got the Ultra, the low end. They've got the Evolution in the middle and the Infinity at the top end. They are different tools. I don't see them. There is a jump in quality between all of them, the way that they're designed and their use cases. But my point is, with the Infinity, for example, say you're buying the Infinity with the 0.15 mil needle, that's a very, very precise tool for a very, very specific job. And you're painting very, very small details. That's not a batch base coating tool. Whereas the Ultra, I've had my Ultra the longest of any of my airbrushes. I've had probably 5 or 6 airbrushes now, sold them, just wanted to try different stuff. The Ultra is the only one I've had for all of that time. And it's the cheapest one they sell, but it's a reliable, solid base coating tool that I can abuse. And it has a nice big spray with its 0.4 mil nozzle. And I can just use it as a reliable workhorse over and over and over again.
Yep.
And I haven't got to worry too much about finessing it and cleaning it. Whereas you've got the Infinity or the Infinity CR Plus, which is a much, much more expensive tool. But depending on the job that you're trying to fulfill with that, it might be a lot better for you. For a lot of people, it will be. But it's not necessarily this like catch-all of you need to go out and spend a fortune. Equally, I don't think that going out and buying a cheap Chinese airbrush,
no, I agree,
you're going to have a bad time with it. There is obviously a reason that these are more expensive tools designed for miniature painting specifically. But I think, like, knowing what you're getting, I think that's why the Evolution is like the most popular one.
I literally think the Evo, I'll say it now, like my favorite airbrush, I've had Infinities, I've had Ultras, I've had, my favorite airbrush is the Evolution AL Plus, the aluminium one, like the top Evolution. It's my favorite.
That's
one.
That's what I have as well.
Yeah, it's my favorite. It's super light. Like, I think it's like 56 grams or something crazy like that. It's like aluminium, super light. And like with a 0.2, 0.4, I can do all the things that I want to do with it. It's that really happy medium, great consistent airbrush for me that I've found for my personal use, in my opinion. But then again, I know a lot of people that use Infinities. I know a lot of people that use Ultras. I know a lot of people that use.
I've had both. So I've had all three consecutively, actually. And I think my favorite one is the new 2024 version of the Evolution.
Yeah.
Which I think is in one of our bundles, actually.
It is, yeah.
I mean, that's been absolutely fantastic. And that's not the top end one, but it's been the best tool for me in my use case.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, the thing I will say, and this, I've just got to tack this on because I do want to say this, just as one thing, that the disparity between the Evolution and the Infinity is really that it has extra things on it that like lock the needle in place, like the quick fix system and all that kind of stuff. Personally, for me, I personally prefer having the control in my finger than relying on something as a mechanism.
The backstop.
Yeah, because the thing is, you get used to it and like, it's great. Don't get me wrong. You can set it in there. It's almost like having autopilot in a plane or like, you know, an automatic car, whatever. I drive a manual car. I like having control of the thing that I'm using.
I love that the car has become this thing.
I thought you were going to say, I fly my own plane.
No, I don't fly my own plane. But the thing is like, I just think that like, personally for me, mitigating your trigger control for a gizmo or gadget that's going to hold it in place, you know, holding it in place, I think you lose a bit of muscle memory by relying on that thing. It's like walking down the street with crutches when you've not got broken legs. That's the way that I look at it. Yeah,
but like, potentially, but it's like a thing of, are you ever going to have to not use it? So if you're never going to have to not rely on it, then you
to
might
be fair,
have to
you don't
it
actually
easier.
Have to use it. So like the new Evo's got the backstop system.
But what I'm saying is the only way you lose out, if you lose out on your trigger control or your muscle memory for using it, the only way you're ever going to lose out is if you then decide to not use it again.
Well, yeah, so no, like, I get that. But what I'm personally saying is I just don't think, like, I think for how good, whether it's a 24 Evolution or the AL Plus or whatever, I think that for the difference in price point, for what you actually tangibly get on the airbrush, I'd go for an Evo every day, personally. That's just fair. Me, you know.
One thing I wanted to briefly touch on as a little closing talking point is safety. Mm-hmm. I will say, if you are going to be using an airbrush, I think that this is something that YouTubers especially I think are really, really irresponsible with, and that is not promoting good practices with being safe with an airbrush. You are atomizing paint. It is going into the air. People like to throw around this "they're not toxic" thing. It's like that's some excuse for you can inhale paint. That's not how it works.
You're still breathing in something which you shouldn't be breathing in.
You're not meant to breathe this stuff in. Yeah. Please, for your own sake, wear a mask. If you're spraying, if you are spraying indoors, please use like an extractor booth set up that vents out the window, good ventilation in the room. I would just say that as a little caveat for that.
Like most 3M painting masks for like proper painting of walls and material, like using other sorts of paint and stuff like that. Most 3M masks with those specific paint tailored filters will serve you super well for miniature painting. And they're not
expensive.
20 quid on eBay. Like I'd rather pay 20 quid on eBay than have problems with my lungs later in life.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And as well as that, like you don't want to be like, if you've ever not used a mask, which I foolishly did when I was first starting to spray, you can literally see if you go like blow your nose, there's like paint.
It's
horrendous. Like that can't be good for you.
No, exactly.
And it's also like, you're also avoiding like any smells or any like headaches you're going to potentially get.
I was going to say, I had it when, I also didn't have a mask like the first time I was using it. And I remember like spraying for like a bit of a like good session of spraying, whatever. And thinking to myself, like, I had the ventilation and everything. I just didn't have a mask on. And I remember thinking, like, oh, it's not actually that strong. Like it's not been that strong. Like I can't even really smell anything notable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I put it away, whatever. Left the room.
I knew he was going to say that, yeah.
Left the room, instantly smelled what the room should actually smell like. And I was like, and then I turned back around and went back to the room and I was like, okay, that's a lot of like extra fumes and the smell and everything, yeah.
I guess if you've not got one, the similar comparison would be if you've ever been like sat in your hobby room or your hobby desk, like building a load of models with like your plastic glue,
yeah.
And you don't realize it smells until you leave and you walk back in the room and you realize the room stinks of glue.
Similar thing.
Question of the week time. Thank you everyone for submitting your questions for question of the week. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, please leave it in the comments down below of the video here on YouTube. Or if you're listening on any of the audio platforms, just a reminder to you, if you are watching on YouTube, we are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Please fire us a DM on Instagram at Siege Studios. This question comes from Darren Schmidt, who says, on the topic of self-taught painters, made me think of what advice you would give to someone who is starting to teach their friends how to paint minis.
Yeah. I've got two quick, important ones for this that I think people overlook a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep in mind, if you're teaching someone how to paint, you are trying to benefit them. You're not trying to benefit yourself.
Yeah.
You should not push all of your things onto them. Like, listen to them. If you're teaching someone how to paint, you've got to listen to them. They're painting from scratch or they're just getting into Warhammer or something like that. Listen to what their actual interests and reasons for doing this thing is. I think that's like,
don't make it about you.
Yeah, yeah. That is one of the most, I get that you want your friends to paint an army so that you can play a game with them, and
you want to just share your general excitement.
And I get, again, we're all enthusiastic about it, so it's like you want to just share it, but listen to them. Find out why they actually want to do it and then base what you're going to teach them off of that. Because the other side of it, kind of the similar point, is to not overwhelm them.
Yeah.
It's such an overwhelming thing if you really get into it with painting. So if there's certain things that's why you want to find the thing that they're instantly interested in and hammer in on that. So not really like technical advice there, but just things to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah.
I've only got three things to add into this because I think they're just, from literally the get-go, teach them just how to dilute paint. Really simple. Just literally how to dilute paint down a little bit so it's not going on thick or neat from the pot. Don't get paint in the ferrule and literally just try and be neat. And that, if think of those three things, if you just have those three things from starting, at least that gives you a nice little bedrock of you're putting the paint on nice and thin, you're being neat with what you're doing, and you're not ruining your brushes. And I think those three things, in my opinion, will help someone.
I like that because it's zero input on any of the creativity.
Oh, yeah, you've got to let, like, honestly, it's like, you've got all your gear to go off into the wild, and be safe. Yeah. Just go. That's kind of like...
You don't have any input into teaching them what looks good.
No. Yeah. I think like, colour theory and all that other jargon, like, I think that can be way too much of an Everest for someone to climb.
You can introduce that later. Like, just let them paint for, like, a bit. Yeah, like, just, give them some time.
Just get paint on the model, get it neat, paint maybe a couple of details neatly, and once you've got that, like, you're on your way, you know. That's what I would probably add to it.
Okay, this is Hobby Hacks. This is our closing weekly tradition on the podcast where we share a hobby hack with you. You can incorporate into your painting. I've got another one for you.
Hang on, sorry, I've just realised we're obviously pre-recording this episode. Is this coming out in April?
Potentially.
I should have thought of one.
Well, you didn't. So,
I'm not taking that as a fail.
No, that's fine.
I'm not taking that as a fail.
We'll roll one over into
May.
We'll roll one over into May. It's fine. Come on. Okay.
Well, let me see if I got one.
I love that we're doing this in real time. This is great audio.
Let me see if I got one. I'm thinking.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll do it as a bonus one. So I've got one. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
No pressure. You've got like 3 minutes. Mine is, if you are looking for a palette for dry brushing, or you're looking for a solid supply of cork for basing, I've personally found that whenever you get cork from like hobby shop or whatever, it's too thin. You've got to stack it up. If you want to do like cork rocks on your bases and whatnot, you need some of that thicker stuff. You can buy it on eBay. You can buy it on Amazon, but it tends to be quite expensive. But fear not, because IKEA, the Swedes, have got you covered. There is a product called, it's the best product name. You ready for this? It's called Heat.
Okay.
And it is made as a pot stand.
I thought it was going to be a proper IKEA name, like...
I thought that as well.
Loads of G's and D's.
Yeah, no. For some reason, they decided to just bin off the Scandinavian names for this. But this is made for putting like a hot pot on in your kitchen so you don't burn your worktop, I guess. But it's £2.50 for a two-pack. And they're these big slabs of thick cork, which you can tear into pieces to use for basing your models. Or you can use it as a dry brush palette. Quick and easy. Straight out of the box.
Very nice.
And you get two of them. And they're cheap. There you go. Joe, yeah, I'm trying to stall for you.
I have one.
Okay, yeah. Right, go.
Jeez. I have one. My initial plan was to actually do like a load of rubbish ones. But I think this is quite good.
All right.
So we're talking about batch painting and painting armies and stuff like that. And if you follow us and you don't really use like model holders to paint, so you don't actually have like the plastic like model holders, you use your Jenga pieces or you use your shot glasses and stuff like that. And what I'm getting at is every model has its individual holder. You can keep track of,
so you're saying in a scenario where you don't have one holder that you're putting each model on. You've got like 10 models and each model is on its own holder
on its own permanently. That's important to this. If you don't do that,
game over.
This isn't for you, I'm afraid.
So for the 9 of you that's still listening.
Yeah. What I'm getting at is you can, I found a really helpful way to keep track of how many coats you've done if you're batch painting through, is to do a little line in that color on your holder. So if I'm base coating all my red, I'm doing the first coat of all the red. I will, after I've done the first coat, do a little line in red.
So you know they've all got red on them.
On that holder. So I know they've got one coat of red, and then you go back around, do it for two, you do a second line, and you can keep track of...
And you've already got that red on your brush. So after you're done painting it on the model, you just paint a quick line on the cup.
Exactly, right, yeah. Right, and that way, you know that you've done the same amount of coverage on every single model.
That's actually brilliant.
Yeah.
Good.
It's a good one. Solid. Redeemed it.
Solid start. Solid start to April.
Well, it's better than... Oh, did you know you could use slate as slake? I think that's actually better. If I'm
never living that one down, am I?
No.
Solid. Well, on that.
I think that's a good one because not everyone does that.
That is solid.
Starting off strong, you've got, I guess, three more of these to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can look forward to even more hacks like that one on future episodes with Joe in April. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of Paint Perspective. If you could please do us a huge, huge favor by checking us out on iTunes and leaving a 5-star review, even if you watch on YouTube, that would massively support us. And don't forget to subscribe to the channel, like the video, do all those sorts of things. Get your questions in for question of the week. We will catch you next time.